need to see me in here.
I'm the last person to ask, but I'll look.
Take a look. Do you see me?
You look great.
That's not what I meant.
You look great.
Enough of me is in there? All right, good morning, everybody. Can you see me? All right, I want you to know that we're recording already. Did you turn here? I just would like to you're unruly this morning. What's happened? I'm going to start punishing everybody. All right. Watch it. Watch it. Watch it over there. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Where did everybody come from? Anyway, I want to welcome a number of West Hempstead families that are here. It's very strange. I'm out of West Hempstead in how many years? 35 years. 35 years, and I can still recognize them, and I even know their names. And we have the Shiawitzes here, and Castleman, two Castlemen, and we have a Mindy Liebman here. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. West Hempstead was a great experience for the Gold family. Who else is there? Oh, well, now she's always here. Sandy Burlinger. I was just asking Bela about the Treismans.
Yes.
Are they okay?
Yeah, he just had some surgery.
Oh, so we'll get the number. Bela, get the number. So tell them that I was asking about them. And of course, the fact is that Moshe is my technician. He runs this film over there. All right. Anyway, it's very good to have you here. And give my regards to Hempstead Avenue. Now, those are very good years. I don't know if I said it in my book, but I think I should have left the impression someplace that West Hempstead were very good years for us. And so, of course, well, West Hempstead, I remember saying it, or we said it, my wife said it to me, we said it to when we left Toronto. We said, first of all, that West Hempstead is 560 miles closer to Eretz Yisrael, and it's only 20 minutes along the southern state to Kennedy Airport. So that in many ways, West Hempstead brought us closer to Eretz Yisrael, though it was very, very difficult to leave. It was a beautiful community. The trees, the bushes, and even the people. The people were very nice. All right. The subject of today's shiur is somebody who is at the very heart of Parshat Chayei Sara. There's no Parshat Chayei Sara without him. It's a parsha at the beginning, Sara dies and is buried. At the end, Avram dies and he is buried. Yitzchak marries Rivka, but the personality who dominates the whole Seder is Eliezer, the servant of Avram. And you may never have noticed the fact that his name doesn't appear a single solitary time in the whole Seder. And I think it's very significant. He is referred to as Ha'eved, the servant. I don't like to use the word slave. That's not really the translation of Eved. When God tells Yahushua at the beginning, say to Yahushua, Moshe Avdi Mace, he doesn't mean Moshe, my slave, as I, the one who serves me. Va'avadetem et Hashem Elokeichem, serve God, your God, with all your heart. Eliezer is the servant of Avram. And when he has to introduce himself to the family of Rivka, he doesn't give them his Tudat Zehut number. He doesn't tell them what his name is. He simply says, Eved Avram Anochi. I am Avram's servant. And that to him is the greatest mark of distinction. Throughout the Seder, he is the Eved, the servant. And he does a masterful job. He is a great shadchan. He puts together two people who've never met and who live 1,000 kilometers away from one another, and he makes a shidduch. And we're all here because of that shidduch. Did it ever occur to you? We're all here because of that shidduch. Eliezer Eved Avram is an absolutely unusual individual, and what we're going to do today is trace his greatness. Now, in Parashat Lech Lecha, he is referred to twice, once without his name, once and the only time in Torah that his name appears. In Parashat Vayera, he is going to be referred to in passing. And then in Parashat Chayisola is when he, in a sense, comes in to his own, and again, without his name mentioned. So, the beginning of this year, numbers 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. Everything on the first page, except the last reference, everything on the first page is from Lech Lecha. We're going to trace the development of Eliezer. We're even going to find out something about his background that is unbelievable. Anyway, let's begin. In Parashat Lech Lecha, it's talking about the four kings who have conquered Sodom, and they took Kol Rechush Sodom, they took all of the possessions of Sodom and Amorah and all their food, and they departed by Yikchu et Lot v'et Rechusho ben Achi Avram. They took as a captive Lot and all of his possessions, and Lot is the son of Avram's brother. Why must they mention here, we know this already from 2-3 times before, why in this struggle, in this great world war where Lot is taken captive, they have to mention his yichus, that he's the son of the brother of Avram? Because the fact is that this was not a war of conquest for territory. It was like most probably many wars, and certainly the wars of our days, it was a religious struggle. Amraphel, who was the head of the five of the four kings, Amraphel was Nimrod. Nimrod was the arch foe of Avram. Nimrod represented idolatry. Avraham Avinu, the revolutionary, is the one who represents the belief in one invisible God. These two are locked in struggle. We know, of course, the famous Medrash that Nimrod had him thrown into the furnace, and Avraham emerged unharmed and unscathed. So one would have thought that Nimrod would have laid off Avraham. No. Religious wars continue, regardless of what the results of one or two struggles may be. It's a struggle to the death, ultimate struggle to the end. And anybody who doesn't realize that we are caught in a religious struggle is going to make the terrible mistake of thinking that if we give up land, if we take down settlements, if we are only a little bit more forward, if we help the Palestinians with all sorts of economic incentives, this will bring peace. It's nonsense, Shabbat, nonsense, and it's a religious war. And the religious war is not only between the Muslim world and the Jewish world. The Muslim world knows how to kill itself. For years I'm trying to get, to understand completely the difference between the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Alawites and the Wahhabis, the Hulu, the Hulu. It's not like Sidon and the Snagdim or Kippot Sukkot. We're talking about people who are out in a struggle to the death against one another. Nimrod is in locked in battle with Avraham and the ideas of Avraham, and if he can't get Avraham, you know who he goes after? He goes after his nephew. That's why when it says that they took Lot, the battle was to get Lot, and hopefully by getting Lot they're going to get to Avraham. So they took Lot, that's Rechusho, Ben Achi Avraham, Vayelchu, Vuhudo Sheik Bestom, he was in Stom, Vayoha Apolet. There was one who escaped from the battle by Gagag La'Avram Ho'ivri. He told Avram, and you see, here is another proof that what we're talking about is not just a war, but a religious struggle. Avram's name appears many times. Only one time is referred to as Avram Ho'ivri, the Hebrew. And Chazal tell us, our rabbis tell us, Ivri, the whole world is on one side, and he's on the Eved, the other side. Because this world war is a religious struggle. And in every world war, then it was the four and the five kings, in every world war, the Jew is a victim. Is a that struggle. Anyway, there's one who flees, and Avram then was Shochem, was dwelling Be'elon, and Mamre, who Amori, Achieshkov, Achion, Avraham, Bali, Bris, Avram. They were the people who had entered into a treaty with Avram. He's in the area of Hebron, Kiryat Arba, Elon, Mamre. That's where he is. Vayishma Avram heard ki nishba achiv, that his brother, what it means here is really extended brother, mishpucha, he heard that his family had been taken captive by Yorek at Chanichav Yelidei Beisai, he armed his students, he had students, 318 of them, he armed them. Shmona also Rushloshmeot Vagird of Adam 318, and they pursued the four mighty kings till dawn. This was talking about the famous midnight ride of Avraham Avinu, 318 men against four mighty kingdoms, and he pursues them and crushes them. Rashi says in number two. You know what? Let's just look at the last Rashi there. Shmona Osar 318, Rabbeinu Amru, our rabbi said, Eliezer Levado Hoyo, the one who went out to battle was Eliezer. Who minyan gematria shel shmo, the numerical value of Eliezer is 318. So unbelievable. One man went out against those four mighty kings who were rulers of the world. Ah, but the most significant piece of information of all is the Targum Yonatan. I have it underlined. Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel says who went out to battle? Eliezer Bar Nimrod. You see it's on? Eliezer was the son of Nimrod. Do you know what's going on over here? I know what's going to happen over here. The psychologists that can't learn a Pasuk Chumash without psychology. It was obviously a bad relationship between Nimrod and his son Eliezer. I don't know, maybe he wanted a car for his 16th birthday. Nimrod said no. So what's the worst thing that Eliezer can do to aggravate the kishyus out of his father, Nimrod, is join Avram to become a believer in the God of Avram. There's nothing that could hurt Nimrod more than that. Nimrod is the symbol of idolatry in the world. But all right, we don't take that into consideration at all. That's nonsense. The pasuk over here said that Avram sent chanichav. Those whom he taught, those whom he learned. Yeah, you know what? It happens. It happens that from a family so far out comes about tshuva. How do you like that? We have enough stories in our day of children. Who was it? Shalom Galoni had a son or a daughter that. All of them, the whole bunch of them, everybody, unless of course they all wanted to aggravate their parents, but I don't believe that's so. There are just a great number of people who come from non-religious families who have become full. And here it is, Eliezer most probably was a little bit more clear thinking than his father, when he saw Avraham Avinu emerge unscathed, unharmed, unsinged from the furnace, he decides maybe this Avraham has a message. Maybe there is something I can learn from him. And Eliezer becomes the servant of Avraham. And there it is. He's the one who goes out and ultimately crushes his father. It happened in fact, and what it also means is that ultimately the belief in one God is going to conquer the world. Paganism will pass from the face of this earth. I still haven't been able to figure out who ever gave him the name Eliezer. Nimrod didn't call him Eliezer. It may very well be that following this great victory, he took the name Eliezer. God is the one who assisted me. God was my strength. By the way, Moshe Rabbeinu had a son by the name of Eliezer, and he called him Eliezer because God saved me from the sword of Paro. May very well be. It's a theory just as good as anybody else's. By the way, I don't know anybody else's theory. I only know mine. Eliezer. My God is the one who saved me. And maybe this is his great statement. my God, Dad, not your gods. My God is the one who stood behind me. So this Targum-Yonatan is a has turned the struggle into a struggle between a father and a son. Isn't it, in a sense, precisely what Avram did? Avram shattered the idols of his father Terach. Eliezer is shattering the idols of his father Nimrod. But then let's go further. Later on in Parshat Lech Lecha, after the battle is over, the king of Sodom and Malki Tzedek Melech Shalom, the great high priest Malki Tzedek Melech Shalom, Baruch Avram, he comes out to say, blessed is Abraham, and he brings out bread and wine to Avram. I always have mixed feelings about this Malki Tzedek Melech Shalom. The Targum Unkelus says, Malki Tzedek Melech Shalom, Malki Tzedek Malko de Yerushalayim, the king of Yerushalayim. The first time that Yerushalayim is mentioned by the name Shalem. And Chazal, our rabbis even tell us that this Malki Tzedek was Shem, the son of Noach. Shem, the son of Noach. And I always wonder, he's the great priest. What did he do during the 26 years of a world war? His own children are killing one another. What did he do? The only one who did anything in the whole world was Avram and Eliezer. And Malki Tzedek most probably is engaged in holy thoughts, but does nothing. Why don't we hear a word coming out from Malki Tzedek? He remains silent before evil in the world. I don't know what Malki Tzedek would have done if he would have heard that somebody was adding on to a room someplace in Yehuda v'Shomron. He might have gotten very upset about that. But the fact that 200,000, 250,000 are killed in Syria, and the fact that the 60 million refugees in the world, not a sound. Not a word. So I'm a little down on Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem. All right. Now, after all of that, Torah tells us that Avram was concerned. There were many people who were killed in the battle that he led against Nimrod. There may even have been innocent civilians that were killed. Kol otam nefashot, Rashi says, all of those who are killed. God most probably tells him, listen, you know, unfortunately, civilians who find themselves in a war zone are going to suffer. Take a look at what the Americans did in Afghanistan. You understand? Bomb the hospital. Well, nobody cares about that. But if something happens over here, you understand? Oh, the whole rocket. I can't care. I better stick to the text of the function. Anyway, the Chabeshim tells Avraham Avinu, Schorcha harbi miyod. Your reward is great. Number four. By Yomer Avram. Avram said, Hashem alakim, God, matitim li. What can you give me? What kind of reward? Well, nochi holei chadini. I am childless. Uben meshek beisi hu damesek Eliezer. I'm going childless, and the one who is in charge of my house is Damesek Eliezer. First and only time that he is mentioned by name. By Lech Lecha, by Yero, Chai Yisora, only time he's mentioned by name. Avram says, I have no children. God is going to assure him, don't worry. A child of yours is the one who's going to inherit you. But over here there's a fascinating Rashi. I know that I say that about every Rosh, but this is more fascinating. And I'll show you why it's more fascinating. Number five, you can get confused over there on the left hand, on the right hand side it says five. On the left hand side it says three. The three means Rashi is going to give three explanations of the name Damesek Eliezer. He is called Damesek Eliezer. Lefi HaTargum, first shot. That's why there's a little one above it. According to the Targum, Targum Unkelis, Mi Damesek Hoya. He was Eliezer in the English. How did they say that? The English says the Damascene. It's not a dirty word. It means somebody who comes from the Damascus. All right? The Damascene. And over Targum says, Damascus Eliezer from Damascus. You know, I have a vivid imagination. We learned earlier, he was the one who pursued the forces of the four kings all the way to Damascus. You know what it means? He's returning home to Damascus after who knows how many years that he was gone. You know how he returns home? As a victor in one of the great battles of history. It's the little boy it makes from downtown Damascus, or maybe a slum neighborhood over there, who's coming back now at the head of an army of maybe 318 men who just crushed four great kings. So the Targum Unkelis says he is from Damascus, and that's why he's called Damesek Eliezer. Pretty straightforward. Ulfi Medrash Agada. Now those words are going to be very important. According to the Medrash, Agada, Sherodaf Hamalachim Ad Damesek. The Medrash says he got the name Eliezer of Damascus after that great night that he pursued the kings all the way to Damascus. Nelson of Trafalgar, right? Who else? I don't know. Patton of the Battle of the Bulge. He became known by his great battle. He's the one who pursued the kings all the way to Damascus, so he became known as Eliezer of Damascus. The next two words in Rashi, I will make this Rashi so unbelievable. Ube Gemara Shalonu, and in our Gemara. You have to understand the power of those two words. Gemara Shalonu means the Babylonian Talmud. That's our Gemara. Now, in Chumash, Rashi most probably quotes Talmud Bavli 1,000 times. 2,000 times. He nearly never refers to it as Gemara Shalonu, our Gemara. The fact is, there's only one place in all of Chumash where he's going to refer to something from Talmud Bavli, and there he says it a little Gemara Bavlit Shalonu, our Babylonian Talmud. And by the way, in that Rashi, which we will learn in the next few weeks, it also says Umedrash Agada. Rashi there says the Medrash Shehi Agadas Eretz Yisrael. The Medrash was written in Eretz Yisrael. Gemara Shalonu is Bavlis. Why in heaven's name does Rashi here once in all of Chumash refer to a quote from Talmud Bavli as Gemara Shalonu, our Gemara? What does the Gemara say? Remember, we have two pshatim so far. He's called Damesek Eliezer because he's from Damesek. He's called Damesek Eliezer because his great victory was at Damascus. He comes into Damascus as the great conqueror of the four kings. Ubegemara shalanu, darash nutbikin. This is so beautiful. Our Gemara expounds the name Damascus. Damascus is not the name of a place. Our Babylonian Talmud said that the word Damascus is an abbreviated form of Dole Umashke. Dole means to fetch water, and Mashke, give to drink. He would draw water and give drink, mitoros rabo la'achedim, from the Torah of his Rebbe to others. That Damascus Eliezer was the one who taught the Torah of Avram to others. Do you get what's going on over here? You know what's going on over here. Anyway, the way I read the Rashi, and I think I'm not too wrong. You know what? I think I'm right. Rashi is telling us the second pshat is the Medrash Agada, so that we should know it's Eretz Yisrael. The third pshat he's calling it Gemara Shelanu, so you know it's Talmud Bavli. And all the difference in the world between the two. The Medrash of Eretz Yisrael sees the greatness of Eliezer in his ability to stand up and fight. The Gemara Bavlis, the Gemara that was written in Bavel, where Israel never had military strength or might. You know what they did? They took all of the great brains and intellect, and not having a state and not having an army, what they did with it was they immersed it in Torah. Eliezer, according to the Talmud Bavli, is the one who teaches Torah. Eliezer, according to the Medrash, is the soldier who goes out and fights. I would say that most probably Rashi is describing the first Hesder student in history. Eliezer is both the great Talmud Chacham who teaches Avraham's Torah to others, but he's also the one who's ready to go and fight. Two different perspectives, completely different perspectives. And in a few, one of these days we're going to expand on that perspective, but this year, how it happens, you know, after all these years, suddenly a question occurred to me as I was reading Parashat Lech Lecha and Vayera. I'll just tell you what it says. There's a famine in the land. Avraham goes down to Mitzrayim. Before he goes down, he makes sure that he gets his story straight with his wife. You're my sister, right? I'm your brother, right? I'm afraid they may kill me in order to take you. And what happens? Avraham comes out to Mitzrayim, and he sort of is helpless, and he waits. The knock on the door comes, and it says, Sarah was taken to the house of Paro. Then God comes down on Paro real bad. And Paro suffers, and he's notified from heaven that this is a married woman. Don't you touch her. The next morning, Paro asks Avraham, and you can look it up, it's at the beginning of Lech Lecha, why did you do this? Why didn't you tell me that she is your wife? No answer. Avraham doesn't say a word. The same thing is repeated in Parshat Vayera. Avram comes to Gror, where Avimelech, king of Plishtim, is king. And again they make up to say, she's my sister, he's my brother. And Sarah is taken to the palace of Avimelech. And God comes down on Avimelech. The next morning, Avimelech says, Avraham, The same question that Paro asked Avram, Avimelech asks Avram, why didn't you tell me that your wife? I nearly committed a terrible sin with her. You would have brought down destruction upon us. Why didn't you tell us? And Avram answers, there's no fear of God here. And I was concerned for Haraguni. They would kill me because of my wife. Isn't the question obvious? Why doesn't Avram answer Paro? Same question. One is asked by Paro, the other by Ahimelech. By Paro, Avram Avinu remains absolutely silent, doesn't say a word. And to Avimelech, he holds off and lets him have it. There's no fear of God over here. You guys were to kill me because of my wife. Why? You know what I believe? When Avram is outside of Eretz Yisrael by Paro, he's a frightened man. He doesn't resist. He doesn't resist when they take her away. By the way, the same man who doesn't resist when Paro takes Sarah finds out that Lot has been captured and he sends out 318 men to crush four mighty kingdoms. That's about 30 psukim after the confrontation in Mitzrayim. You get what's happening over here? In Mitzrayim, Avram is frightened. He's terrified. They're going to take Sarah. They take her. Not a word out of him. He's questioned. He says nothing. And then about 30 psukim later, you don't even notice it. 30 psukim later, he hears that Lot has been captured. Instantly, he arms his men and they go out to battle. What's the difference? The difference is simple. The Jew in Chutzlars doesn't have power. The Jew in Chutzlars is a Jew in Chutzlars. The Jew of Eretz Yisrael fights for what's his. Two different worlds. Avram in Mitzrayim doesn't open up his mouth to say a word to Paro when he's asked the great question. Why didn't you tell me? Avimelech, that's an Eretz Yisrael. He lets him have it. Two different mindsets. And the fact is, it's always been true, and it's true today as well. Rashi is telling us, by telling us Pshat 2 and 3 in Damesek, Eliezer, Rashi is so subtly but beautifully telling us the Medrash that was written in Eretz Yisrael described Eliezer, says that Eliezer was called Damesek Eliezer because he was the one who pursued the four kings until Damascus. Ubegemara Shelanu, they looked at a different aspect of Eliezer. Both aspects were true. There was another side to Eliezer. Eliezer was the one dole who fetched the Torah of Avram, umashke, and gave it to others to drink. Because the Jew of Bavel could not imagine what it means to wage war. So therefore the war in which he was involved was the war, so to speak, the war of Torah. All three pshatim in Rashi are most probably true. They don't really disagree with one another. He was from Damascus, as the Targum said. He pursued the kings all the way to Damascus, as the Medrash Haggadah says, and he was also the one who taught the Torah of Avram to others, as our Talmud Bavli says. Is that a great Rashi? Tell me, man, you can shake your heads and say, it's a great, great Rashi. All right, let's go further. So that's it. We've taken care of Eliezer. as he appears in Parashat Lech Lecha. In Parashat Vayera, he only appears when it says that Avram went to the Arkada Uno'oro Imo, and his lads were with him, two young men. So Rashi says, number six, Rashi says it was Yishmael and Eliezer. Those were the two who accompanied him to the Arkada. That's all. We've got to get moving over here. Because there's a great deal to say now. Now we're up to Parshat Chayesara. Parshat Chayesara, Eliezer is going to rise to true greatness. We're not going to read all of that. Let's see. We'll just start, so we'll get into it. Avram asks Eliezer to do the most important job of all, to be the shatran, go find a wife for Yitzchak, and he sends him off to his land and his birthplace. Second line, Vayikach ha'eved asorah gemalah migemalah adonov. The servant took 10 camels from his master's camels, and he went, v'chol tu adonov v'yodo. All the good of his master was in his hand. Vayokom v'yelech al'aram na'arayim el'ir nocha. He went to Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nocha. Vayavrech ha'gamalim yichutzair. And he made the camels kneel, lie down outside the city of Be'er HaMayim by the well of water. It's evening time. Le'et tzeit ha'shoavot, when the girls who go fetch water go out. And he said his great prayer. Hashem Elokei Adonai Avram, God, the God of my master Avram, Hakei no lefonai hayom. Arrange it for me this day. Vasei chesed of Adonai Avram. Do kindness with my master Avram. Hine anochi nitzav alein amayim. This is his plea. He begs of God. I'm here at the well of water. Ubenotam shehir yotzav lishov mayim. The daughters of the people of the city are going out to fetch water. The girl to whom I will say, Hatino Kadech Yeshte, incline your jug a little bit so that I can drink. Hatino Kadech Yeshte, the Omra, and she will respond by saying, stay, drink. The Garikamalecha Ashke, I'm also going to give your camels to drink. Ota Hochachto Avdachol Yitzchak, she is the one whom you have shown me is for your servant Yitzchak. And through her I will know Kiyasita Kesed of Adoni, that you did kindness, my master. Vayehi hu terem kilo l'daber. He hasn't even finished speaking to God yet. In his great prayer, v'hinei Rivka yotzei, he said, behold, Rivka comes out. Ashe yulda l'bisuel ben milka eshes nochar achi Avram. We have the whole Yichus over here, who was born to Besuel, who was the son of Milcah. Milcah was married to Nochor. Nochor was the brother of Avram. We have a whole Yichus. The Chaval Shikman, she has her jug on her shoulder. Instant. He hasn't finished praying, and he doesn't know yet that his prayer has already been answered. I had this feeling sort of that all of creation was waiting just for this moment. Here it is, the beginning of the process of the creation of an eternal people. All right, Vanaro Toas Maramiyot, she's very good looking. Basula, a virgin, Vishla Yador, she had not been known by any man. Vatenet Ha'ino, she went down to the spring. Vatamali Kado, she filled up her jug. Vatoal, isn't that's really what the Gemara Bavli Shalom said about Eliezer. Dole, he lifted the waters of Avram and he gave to drink. Yeah, I'm beginning to think, isn't that interesting? The one who was dole umashke mitorach rabo lachedim, the one who fetched the waters of life, the Torah of Avram, and gave it to others, is going to find a shidduch for Yitzchak through a girl who's going to lift the waters out of the well and give him to drink. There's something very poetic about it. Vayoretz Ha'eved L'Grosso, the servant ran toward her. Watch, he's never referred to my name. And he said, Himini no ma'atmai mikadich, let me have a little water. Excuse me. A little water from your jar, Vatoma. And she said, Shisei Adoni, drink, my master. Vatamaheri, she hurried. Vatoret kado al yodo vatashkeyu. And she took her jug down, but put it in her hand. It had been on her
shoulder.
On her shoulder. She was not going to incline her shoulder and let him drink from there. The Ksava Kabbalah says that wouldn't have looked good. It would have mean that his mouth would be coming close to her mouth. No. She's an Ishot Tznua. She takes the jug off and she's holding it in her hand, and from her hand she gives him the drink. Vatachala Ashkoto, and she finished giving him the drink, Vatome, and she said, Gam l'gamalecha eshov, I will also fetch for your camels. Every word she says is so beautiful. First of all, she did not really do exactly what Eliezer had asked for. Eliezer said, God, the girl who I'm going to ask, give me the drink. And she is going to say, drink, and also for your camels, I will fetch what? Don't say that. She only, after she has given him to drink, only then does she say, I will also fetch water for your camels. Do you know why? Because she is sensitive to the dignity of a human being. She doesn't want to say, I'm going to give you and your camels to drink. You're a camel. He's a camel. Everybody's a camel. No. She separates the two. Give him to drink. After he drinks, then she says, ah. Now, by the way, Eliezer had said, the girl who will say, drink. It's earlier. Who said, drink. And she'll say, drink the gam gamalecha ashker. Also your camels I will give to drink. She does not say, I will give your camels to drink. She says, I will fetch water for your camels. That's what we're up to. Eshav. Again, also, she's very sensitive. In other words, I'm giving you to drink and giving them to drink. No. Sensitive. Very, I'll give you the drink. And then later she says, I will fetch water for the camels. Anyway, but tomorrow, this we will talk about most probably next week, that there's fascinating similarity between the story that we are reading right now and the beginning of Parshat Vayera, when Avraham brings the three dusty travelers into the house. He runs, he hurries, he brings, he makes. This young damsel is running and hurrying and doing and working. There are such similarities. Yes.
Why do you keep calling her a girl when even our text calls her a woman?
Guilty. A woman.
Okay. Thank you.
I have been straightened out. I thought, when you call a woman, it sounds like she's, who knows how old.
No, or a young woman.
When you call a woman a girl, you know,
but
she's so girly. Anyway,
I
accept. I've been chastised and I accept it.
You call her a
lovingly.
Young woman.
Okay.
A young woman?
A young woman. Is that,
young
that's okay?
Yeah, that's great.
You know what? I'm going to do something better.
What?
Rivka. I'm going to call her Rivka.
Nahara, it says.
What?
It says she's a
Nara.
Yeah, it does. It says Nara.
Yes.
By the way, she's right.
Tova.
It says Nara. It doesn't say Isha. How do you like that? You know what? You better start off with the text. Oh, boy. Chava, thanks for saving me out of that one. Okay. Anyway, and she gave to drink to all of the camel. She fatish av l'chol gemalav. She fetched for all of them. For ish, here, this is the pasuk we're going to focus on. I got to get this. For ish mishto'ela, and the man was astonished, machrish, silent, lada to know hayitzliach Hashem darkoim lo. Has God made his journey successful or not? Wait a minute. What else does he need to know? He doesn't know yet that he has succeeded. The man is astonished. He is silent. To know, he doesn't know yet. Has God made his way successful or not? What are you talking about? It's obvious that she's the one. What's he waiting for? What more does he need? Her two dots say hood number? What does she need? What does he need? What does he need? You know what we need? We need number 8, the Sephorno. Let's go down where it's underlined. Mishtoe. Where it's underlined. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. Mishtoe. The man is astonished. Mishtomein. He's amazed. Al rov hazrizut lasot chesed. With what zealousness she does kindness. The man is he hasn't seen it. Maybe the last time he ever saw anything like this was in the house of Avram. He's watching with absolute amazement. Take a look at this young lady.
Perfect.
Perfect. This young lady. Look at it. Macharish. He remains silent. So the Sverno says, V'lo omar lo, there's something missing over there. I'll tell you what it says. He doesn't say to her, Al titrichi kol kach, don't trouble yourself so much. Wouldn't that be the normal thing that we do? No, don't go to so much trouble. No, he remains silent. He doesn't say to her, Al titrichi kol kach, don't trouble yourself so much. K'mo shehor yoroi b'chol kavuzar. That would have been the correct thing to say. You know, for a person of, you know, a mensch would say, no. He remains absolutely silent. Silent. Ladak lahakir mitoch ofen chasiduta uzrizuta. There's something he yet wants to know. From her zealousness to do it and her kindness, there's something he's waiting for. Ha'itzliach Hashem darko. He's still not sure. Has God given him success? Im yatova chesed hagomo. You know what he doesn't know? If the goodness and kindness that she is now doing, is it pure? Is it complete kindness? Im lo, maybe not. I haven't had it happen to me in a long time. I remember in the old days, was it here or maybe it was in America? You know, you'd come to a traffic light and somebody'd be there to, you know, wipe off your windshield, and then. Right? You know, expecting something. People who do things, and in one way or another, expect some kind of return for it. Now, he's waiting to see, and he won't know it until it's all over. Is there going to be any hint, or maybe even asking Adoni, Vakasa, what do you think? I've been running around over here doing all of this just for fun, for my health. He has to wait till the end. And by the end, he knows that this was kindness, pure, with absolutely no hope or thought of any kind of reward. She most probably isn't even waiting for a thank you. It's pure kindness. That's what he saw in the house of Avraham. That's what he wanted to see here. Let's go to the last page. Page 2. I'm going to add one more extremely significant fact. And what we're doing over here is we're not talking about Rivka. What we're talking about is Eliezer. And as I was preparing all of this, you'll see on the left-hand side of the page, I scribbled onto the page, the window to Eliezer is Rivka. If you want to see what Eliezer is, you know how you see it? Through Rivka. What does he want to see in her? What he wants to see in her is the measure of what he is. We're getting a picture of what Eliezer is. And you know what that picture is? Chesed is done without any hope of reward. You know what Eliezer is? Eliezer is anonymous. He has no name, because he is completely devoted to Avraham and the God of Avraham. No ego. He doesn't count. He's completely given over to the idea of one God. And watch how complete it is. Oh, number 10. Eliezer now is speaking to the family of the hopefully the Kala. Okay? And he says that my master had sent me here. The only place he wanted me to go to the house of my father and to my family, take a wife for my son. For Omar El Adoni, these are the words of Eliezer. And I said to my master, Ulai lo telecha isha acharai. Maybe the woman won't follow me. What happens if she doesn't want to go? So Avraham had told him earlier that if she doesn't want to go, then you're absolved of your responsibility. You don't have the job of shotgun anymore, that's all. If she doesn't want to go, what can you do? Can't force the girl. The word ulai over here is written aleph lamed yud. It's on the line. This was said, as you'll see in number 9, this was said earlier in the Seder, when the Seder begins and Avraham sends him out. Number 9, and we'll go back to between number. But by the way, why didn't anybody ask a silly question? Why did I put number 9 after number 10? You know what it was for? It was to remind me that when I get here, I should say 9 first. And then you'll understand 10. I don't just make mistakes. I either make big ones or it's intentional. I wanted to read 9 first. Take a look at 9. Vayomer Elov HaEved. This is the servant talking to Avraham. Avraham is sending him out on a mission. to find a wife for Yitzchak. So the servant said to him, Ulai lo tova ha'isha, maybe she won't want to go with me. El ha'aretz hazos, to this land. Ha'ashiv ha'ashid et bincha la'aretz ha'ashiv. Should I take your son back there? So Avram says, no, under no circumstances. Now, Ulai over here is spelled with a vav. Aleph, vav, lamed, yud. When he repeats this in number 10, he repeats this now in the house of Lavan and Besuel. He says what he told his master, and it says, and I said to my master, Ulai lo telech ha'isha, and it's written without a vav. So Rashi, there in the middle, says, a liksiv, the way it's written, it can be read to me. And he says the following, Bat hai talol Eliezer. Eliezer had a daughter, Vohya machzel so ilah, Sheyomol Avram, lifnote love. He was looking for some reason that Avram should say, listen, Eliezer, you have a daughter, I have a son, let's make a shidduch. La Sio Pito, to marry his daughter to Yitzchak. Amalei Avram, you have to understand what Rashi is saying here. Avram told him, B'ni Baruch, my son is a blessed one, Vata Arur, and you are an accursed one. He does not mean the personality of Eliezer. Eliezer is the son of Nimrod. He was from the family of Ham, who had been cursed by Noah. Vein Oru Midadek Baruch, one who is cursed cannot cleave to one who is blessed. You know what it means over here? You know why it's written over here without a vav? Why wasn't written earlier without a vav? Because you know what the Torah wants to tell us? Eliezer has the most compelling reason in the world to want to fail in his undertaking. And you know what Eliezer is able to do? He is able to overcome. That personal desire to have Yitzhak as a son-in-law, overcome it to the extent that it in no way affects that which he is doing for Avram. We're talking about absolute greatness over here. And you know what he's doing? It's even more than that. I believe that why it's said over here is he is using the fact that he has a daughter and would want his daughter to marry Yitzchak in order to get Rivka's family a little worried. Don't charge yourself with your Rivka. We have other women who are ready to marry Yitzchak. I have a daughter, and I would love that she should marry Yitzchak. But no. That's not in the cards. It's not going to be. Eliezer not only has he overcome his own personal great desire, he is Eved Avram. That's how he presents himself. And he says to them, Eved Avram Anochi. He doesn't even tell them his name. I'm the servant of Avram. I say the window to Eliezer is Rivka. What kind of kindness does he want from Rivka? The kind of kindness that looks for no reward whatsoever. No, she's not waiting for a thank you. She doesn't have a hand out for something. Pure, complete. The last, number 10, we can't read, I'll read 2-3 lines. It's from the Nesilat Yesharim, second para. Masha Tzorach La'odom, Yoter Iyunim Alocha Rabba, Hu Tarovet Isser. What a person, he's talking about purity. And he says what a person has to be concerned about, even when doing the most noble act of all, that there shouldn't be mixed into it some little little itsy bitsy personal interest. Chesed has to be pure. And he brings the famous Gemara about the Rav Chanina, I think it was Rav Chanina ben Tzadyon, whose daughter was an exceptional standing, and the way in which she walked in an extremely delicate and beautiful manner. And she overheard somebody saying, "Oh, how beautifully she walks." And from that moment on, she became more careful about how she walked. In other words, her walking, which was in a manner of great modesty, all of a sudden, there's something in it that it's not as pure. Eliezer is looking for chesed that is pure. And that's why even when he sees her running back and forth, he's waiting to see did he succeed or not. He can only know that when she has finished. When she has finished. And then the fact that Eliezer has to overcome something that is the idea of Eliezer of his daughter marrying Yitzchak most probably would have been the crowning achievement of his life forever and ever after. But no. His master said no, then it's no. Then he's able to overcome it, and he goes about doing a masterful job and brings that great shidduch to be. So he's traced Eliezer, a warrior, a Talmud Chacham, outstanding student of Avraham. Only one thing I can't answer. Only one question I'm asking, and it bothers me. And upon me for years, it's all right, you know, and I survived so far. But we have to keep thinking about it. What happened to Eliezer? What happened to all of those who had been influenced by Avraham? Where did they disappear to? There were thousands who were the students of Avraham. Is it possible that they maybe laid the groundwork for mankind to accept the idea of a one God? It may be. We're going to talk more about this in Yetzer Hashem next week. That's it.
Thank you.
Their children are here in Israel.
Wait.
How do you close it?
No, he has stopped. Push it, don't be afraid.
This?
Push it.